It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 4 days ago, Congress put final approval on a long-term $1 trillion funding bill, the main item on its year-end agenda. The measure provides money for nearly the entire government through September 30th of 2015, but the spending bill has plenty of critics, including Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, who called it the worst of government for the rich and powerful. And Pittsburgh Congressman Mike Doyle voted against it, and he joins us now by phone. Congressman Doyle, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good. Good to have you with us. Let's begin with why you voted against this $1 trillion spending bill.
Boy, there's lots of reasons to vote against it. I mean, first and foremost, this continues sequestration. We'll be going into year three of sequestration, something that was never supposed to happen. This was the agreement back a couple of years ago where if we couldn't agree to a budget, that sequestration was supposed to be the hammer that would bring both sides to the table. Well, that didn't happen because I think that the administration misjudged some of these House Republicans. They came here to do one thing, and that is to take the federal budget and decimate it, and they don't care how it gets done. So now we're going into this year three of really mindless across-the-board cuts that doesn't look at programs and say what's working and let's continue to fund those programs or plus them up and what's not working also and let's get rid of those programs. So programs like the NIH that are doing important research to find cures for diseases, we're seeing those funds falling under the budget acts. Because of sequestration. So first and foremost, it continues that. But there were some egregious provisions that were put in this bill that could have never passed by themselves, which is why they were put into this must-pass bill. And two that you mentioned earlier, that Senator Warren mentioned, and that is this provision that repealed what's called the push-out provisions in Dodd-Frank. Basically, what we're allowing banks to do now is to take some of their riskiest derivatives. The current law said that if you're going to play in these kinds of risky investments, that you have to, those monies have to be deposited in a non-FDIC fund. In other words, there's no federal insurance on those funds, so that if they lose money with these risky investments, it's on them. What this does is allow them to use funds that are in FDIC-insured accounts to do these risky investments. And if they lose money, guess who pays? The taxpayers pay for this, not the banks. So this is something that could have never passed by itself. This was a provision that was written by Citibank and inserted into this bill. And I just think it's completely egregious to do this in a must-pass budget bill. So that was a big thing for me. And then the other thing is on campaign finance. We are now allowing the wealthiest people in America to contribute 10 times more than the law currently allows them to contribute. Right now, a wealthy person can contribute $32,400 a year to a political party, to the Democratic National Committee or the Republican National Committee. Paul, I don't have many constituents in the 14th District that can cut a $32,400 check to give to a political party. Well, what this bill does is increase that amount tenfold. We now allow those same individuals to write a check for $324,000 per year to political committees. All this is doing is taking the wealthiest people in this country and giving them more power to influence the government. I think that's very egregious, and it's perverting the democracy, all this money in politics now. We've just allowed that to go up tenfold. Those two provisions in the bill should never be there. They had nothing to do with a budget agreement. And I just think it's completely outrageous that members were asked to vote for this budget bill with those provisions in it.
And I want to go back to the Dodd-Frank regulations that were rolled back that you are concerned about. Is there a fear, and based on what you're telling us, Congressman Doyle, is there now the possibility again that the mistakes that were made, the things that happened, and the irresponsible financial behavior that took place on Wall Street that led to the Great Recession, that there's a chance now that with these regulations rolled back that were created as a response to what happened on Wall Street 5 or 6 years ago, that that whole situation could repeat itself without those protections in place?
Well, it could. I mean, what we've said to the banks is, look, if you want to invest in some of these risky behavior, these derivatives, you can do so, but you can't do so in using FDIC-insured money. In other words, if they want to invest money that's risky and maybe has a big reward but could also have a big loss, we don't stop them from doing that. We're just saying that taxpayers are not going to bail them out anymore should these investments lose money. What this provision does is allows them to go into the FDIC-insured accounts. So what that does is put the taxpayers back on the hook, potentially, if these investments turn out to be big losses. Once again, they'll be getting a bailout from taxpayers instead of them taking the losses. That was one of the things we said we weren't going to allow anymore when we did Dodd-Frank. And to have the banks actually write the provision, I mean, if they'd have put this bill on the floor, and they did once before, I mean, this bill was actually on the floor. It was a House bill, H.R. 992, that repealed these, what it's called a push-out provision, and they couldn't pass it. So I'm just saying that, you know, this isn't the way you do this. You don't put these egregious riders into bills, especially a bill that you have to pass or the government shuts down. It put members in a almost an impossible position. But I just couldn't vote for it in good conscience. I mean, I'm not putting my taxpayers back on the hook because the banks want to invest in these derivatives. If they want to do it, they need to accept the losses if they have them, not us.
And there, in the end of the day here, there seems to be a fear, in spite of the things that you're saying, that you would expect many in Congress to vote against, that there's this fear that it seems to be weighing heavily on members of Congress, the fear of shutting down the government for the second time in just over a year. You know, how much do you think that played a part in fellow Democrats, unlike yourself, voting in favor of the bill?
I'm sure it was a factor, and that's why it's so egregious to allow these kinds of riders on budget bills. I really think that you know, there should be rules passed in the House and the Senate that prohibit this kind of tactic, because that's how this gets done a lot. They either sneak these provisions in these bills and you don't know they're there till, you know, some of these, this bill was 1,600 pages. Most members of Congress that aren't on the committees that drafted this or on the leadership teams that drafted this, you know, are forced to read through 1,600 pages to look for provisions like this. These were two of the most egregious that were caught. And it just seems to me that to put them on a must-pass bill, you know, that's the dilemma you have. Do you shut the government down or do you allow these things to pass? The administration, you know, basically sent out a message saying that the president would sign this bill, although he totally disagreed with those two provisions. Well, you know, I think that set the stage for the bill to pass, unfortunately. I still think there was time to kill this bill and go back to the drawing board. And, you know, we could have passed a temporary CR that would have kept the government running for another week while we renegotiated a package without these provisions. But, you know, once the administration said that they would sign the bill, I think that sort of killed the momentum for that.
So you're saying that that the president should have said, I'm not going to sign this if we don't strip out some of the things that, and you've used the word egregious to describe them, like rolling back the Dodd-Frank regulations and the immigration policy situation that we'll address here shortly. So you're saying the president should have made it clear that he wasn't going to sign the bill, that we'd go to a temporary spending plan, and that he should have held out for stripping some of these provisions out of the spending bill.
Yeah, and you know, the other point the administration made, and it's a fair point, by the way, is that what the Republicans were threatening to do if we did not help them pass this bill is they were just going to pass a CR, you know, into March or April. That would have continued funding at all levels of government, at last year's levels. The omnibus, which funds the entire government with the exception of the Department of Homeland Security, does have slightly increased levels in it, staying in, within the sequester caps. But we had a two-year agreement where we lifted those sequester caps, $80 billion, $40 billion on defense discretionary and $40 billion on non-defense discretionary over these 2 years, the 14 and 15 budget. Those increases wouldn't have been in a CR. So if the Republicans carried through with that threat and just simply said that you either take this or we're going to pass a long-term CR into March or April when we take over the Senate, and you'll get a lot less than you have now, that was a legitimate concern that the administration brought up and expressed to us in the Democratic caucus when we were debating over this bill. Whether or not they would follow through with that, you know, you can't know. So it becomes a gamble. And I think the administration's position was that they decided, although they didn't like these provisions in the bill, that they felt getting in the bus to the end of the year for all departments except one was a better scenario for them than trying to negotiate with a new Senate majority that might not, you know, want to continue the expanding the caps over the two-year deal. So that was their defense to it. It's unknowable what, you know, would happen when you don't push it to that level. But a lot of us just felt that whatever leverage we did have in terms of saying, you know, 56 Democrats voted in the House for this bill. 60-some Republicans voted against it. Boehner clearly didn't have the votes to pass this bill in the House. And many of us thought that this could have been leveraged to get a better deal. But, you know, we can't know how it would have eventually ended up. I think the administration makes a valid point in that they say that an omnibus is better than a CR. We just didn't know because we didn't end up having that fight.
And one of the areas where there was not funding is the Department of Homeland Security. It's only funded until February 27th. The Republicans intend to try to then force the president to roll back his immigration policy that removes the threat of deportation from millions of immigrants living in the United States illegally. How would you characterize what's going on here?
Well, I mean, this is really just a piece of political grandstanding. If truth be told, the U.S. Customs and Immigration, it's funded through user's fees, not appropriated funds. So, you know, the fact that they're trying to defund DHS until February, that doesn't even affect the president's immigration initiative. This is just grandstanding by the right wing of the Republican Party, and this is something that John Boehner had to put out there to get them to even consider to let the bill on the floor. I mean, the rule for this bill almost failed. They had to march down two of their members and twist their arms until they almost broke them to change their votes to get this rule passed because their right wing didn't want to put this up without some sort of battle on immigration. So, you know, the action that they took really doesn't affect the president's policy because that money is funded through user fee. What they did do is put a CR on a department that provides essential services that makes our country safe and secure, and they put that in jeopardy. So, I mean, this was a particularly stupid thing that was forced upon us because Boehner had to cave in to the right wing of his party on immigration. And now, you know, 3 months from now, this is a 90-day CR on DHS. He's promising, you know, a big battle and a big stand on immigration. We'll see how that goes. But the real effect of what they did on this budget agreement was simply to put at risk the nation's security and safety by not giving DHS proper funding. As far as the immigration policy of the president, that they didn't affect anything there.
And that, of course, is a very controversial policy, what the president has said that he wants to do with immigration. What is your feeling about it, Congressman Doyle? Do you support what President Obama wants to do here to remove the threat of deportation from millions of immigrants living in the United States illegally?
Yeah, I support comprehensive immigration reform. The bill that passed the Senate with almost 70 votes was a bipartisan bill, which if John Boehner would put on the floor, would pass the House of Representatives, and I would vote for it. But he refuses to put it on the floor, again, to cater to the right wing of his party. And then you have the other issue. You have approximately 4 million or some undocumented in this country whose children are American citizens. And what we're talking about is what the president's doing is saying we're not going to break those families up. That if you're one of the undocumented that has U.S., you know, your children are United States citizens, we're not going to break the families up. I think the frustration the president feels, and I think he acted very narrowly within what he has been advised as his legal authority to make this move. What we really need to do is just to address immigration reform. And the House of Representatives, for some reason, has done absolutely nothing to either put the Senate bill on the floor or to offer an alternative to what the Senate did, because they can't agree amongst themselves on what they want to do. So it seems like, you know, the showdown is looming 90 days from now, and we'll see how it plays out. But I think that every day we fail to address this immigration reform is a day that the situation just continues to get worse. So my hope is that we're going to be able to look at this comprehensively. My fear is that the Republicans are going to want to do this piecemeal, and they're going to want to start with border security, which we've done already. But again, they're going to want to start with that, but then they're never going to want to go further than that. Some are suggesting that they'll give people work permits, but no path to citizenship. Well, I don't think we need a policy that just signs up more indentured servitude in the country. If this is only going to be about using people for cheap labor and not talking about real reform, I don't think that's going to go very far either.
Pittsburgh Congressman Mike Doyle joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. Congressman Doyle, thank you so much for being with us, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you too, Paul. Thanks.
Coming up, should local prosecutors prosecute local cops? Pitt Law Professor David Harris tackles that question next when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.